Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
All right, everybody, man, there was so much stuff that went down last night. Last night, the Mavericks, Kevin, they did it again. They scored almost 150 points. It was pretty amazing.
Look, and I thought the combination looked good again. I know it was not against, once again, the best quality, but that's what we talked about. You're in the middle of this like 11-game run where you should be stomping these chumps out and you want to win like at least 9 of these games. And so that's what they did. They went in, they crushed a team to the extent that when they inevitably folded in the fourth quarter, they were so far ahead that it wouldn't make a difference. That, I'm not kidding.
They'd already
that's
taken
what
most
they have
people
to do.
Out at that point.
I'm not saying they actually fold in this game. I'm saying they need to make a lead so big that when they fold like they so often do, it's not going to be a problem.
I feel like watching that game, James Johnson got off to a good start for Minnesota, and you could see him talking a lot of trash, and I think he was talking trash to Luka at one point. I wonder if that's kind of the philosophy of some of these veteran guys. Look, he's only 20 years old. He's European. I'm going to get in his head. I'm going to talk a lot of trash. And it seems to backfire on a lot of players in the NBA when they're like, the way to kind of get under Luka's skin is to be physical and kind of, you know, slap at his arms and stuff. And hopefully you don't get foul calls on him. But I think when you start talking to Luka and trying to intimidate him through words, it actually fires him up more, and then he starts making more plays because the score was 3 minutes to go before the first quarter. It was somewhat of a close game. It was about a 5-point game, and then all of a sudden it became 41-27 pretty quickly at the end, and it was almost like Luke is like, I've had enough of you, who is not much of an NBA player. You're a nice little role player in the NBA.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to now shut you up by just dominating the end of this first quarter, and we're going to dominate the end of it. And it was kind of like almost that put Minnesota in its place at the end of the first quarter. They're like, son of a gun. Okay, we are not a good team, and we're about to get beat.
Do you think those kind of big picture things happen in all of these games? I feel like that comes up a lot. We're not a good team.
Not good.
I quit.
Being on good teams and bad teams, I will tell you, when things start falling apart early in a game, you kind of go, yeah, we stink. And we're proving it again. And when you've lost, is it like they've lost 17 of 18? And I think it might be 18
good
of 19.
God.
Like Minnesota's on a bad streak right now, and Karl Anthony Towns is out. I think when a team goes on a run to then go up double digits at the end of the first quarter,
right,
for a lot of teams, that doesn't mean much. It's like, that's fine. Hey, we had a bad first quarter. We have three quarters to come back. The Mavericks are a bad fourth quarter team. I think a lot of average and above average teams, if they get down by 10 to the Mavericks, think, we're going to be okay. Let's right the ship.
Yeah.
There's plenty of time. They're a bad team in the fourth quarter. But I think when you're the Minnesota Timberwolves, you look at it and go, okay, we're going to lose again. Let's just play for our numbers, get what we need to get for our points, for our possible future contracts, and let's get out of here.
What a next level way of thinking, and I wonder how prevailing that level of thinking is, where they're like,
oh, on bad teams? That was the problem with the Dallas Mavericks, and I know that the Mavericks didn't want to commit to anybody. They always just wanted to give one-year contracts because they were looking to land the big fish, the max contract guy. So it's like, you know what we're going to do? We're just going to sign these 8 guys to one-year contracts, and we're going to ask Rick Carlisle to try to work a miracle around Dirk Nowitzki with all one-year contract guys for the most part around him. And then next year, if we don't land the great player, we're all going to sign one-year contract guys or maybe have a second-year option on them. And halfway through the season, when the team realized, we're not going to reach our goals.
Yeah.
We're not going, whatever the goal was as a team, we're not going to reach them. I respect Dirk. Everybody respected Dirk. But they started going, I got to get mine. I'm going to be a free agent. And the team I'm playing on doesn't want me. They're not going to want me on a contract that I want to get. So I need to go get my numbers.
Wow.
So that I can get a 3-year contract from somebody that thinks that I'm more valuable than what the Mavericks think I am.
And that, Kevin, is not a team. All right. That is a bunch of guys.
Yeah.
Right? And that's not what you want whenever you're trying to go do the great things.
No, I would absolutely agree with that.
From the 210, Beal talked trash to him earlier this year, but not in a disrespecting way. It was just to see if Luka was a superstar and he earned respect from Beal at the same time.
Oh, my God. It's happening, Corey. It's happening.
Speaking of Bradley Beal, last night scored 55 points, Kevin, as his team lost yet another game in which he's scored 55 points. They lost 137-134 to the Bucks. Here you go. Here is top scoring games this season. All right. 55, loss. 53, loss. 47, loss. 46, loss. 44, loss. 44 points and 10 assists, win. 42 points, loss. 40 points, loss. 37 points lost. So
that's where I go into the locker room
stop scoring.
And I kick a locker and I'm like, what the hell else do you want me to do? The amazing part about this is I think it was 2 days ago. He had 53. That was his career high.
Yes.
And then he bounced out and got a new career high. And they went 0-2 in those two games where he combined for 108 points.
First player since Kobe to score 50 in back-to-back games. So there you go right there. And that's why everybody's like, get Brad Beal out of Washington. And that's why you will continue to hear that name brought up on this show.
He was going to have no problem getting a huge contract. I know he can get a little bit more. And there is a little bit more. I have no clue why he re-signed that huge extension with Washington. I mean, I know why. It was all financially. It was, I'm not going to mess with accidentally getting hurt or anything.
Yep.
And I am going to be getting $30+ million. I'm going to get about $100 million on this 3-year contract extension. So I get, you know, that's exactly why he did it. But he knew he was signing with a terrible team. He knew that John Wall is not liked by a lot of teammates, including, I mean, you hear some things that Bradley Beal might not be on the best terms with John Wall when it comes to being friends/teammates. And so that was why I was so surprised as we'd heard so many kind of negative things about the way that Bradley Beal and other teammates felt about playing with John Wall. And there he goes, and he signs a huge contract. So when he's mad about being in Washington, I think to myself, well, part of this is your fault. Because they can keep you and try to keep building around you. You can say you hate it, and a lot of times when people say, I hate being here, I don't want to be here, trade me, they do get traded. But if they decide to just play it, hey, you signed the extension, we want to build this thing around you, you're young enough that we think that you have 7 or 8 years left in this NBA, then he's just going to have to deal with it.
Now, speaking of trading, or I guess perhaps lack of trading, we counted you all the way down. The Stars did not pull the trigger for Joe Thornton yesterday. And it was, I felt really bad for him because I saw the winners and losers of the NHL trade deadline.
He lost.
Yeah, and he was one of the losers because his team is awful.
Because he didn't get traded?
Yeah, well, think about it. He's on one of the worst teams in the West, and one of the best teams in the West was like sniffing around looking at getting him, and then nothing happened. So I could see how you're like, well, crap.
And he's still looking for his first Stanley Cup.
Oh.
So, like, now he's
just
gonna
drafted in 1997!
Now he's just stuck on a really bad team where they've already dealt Brendan Dillon, they've already dealt Patrick Marleau, so
just a piece
everybody
of metal.
Else... Yeah, right?
No, that's in baseball, and here it means
this
something.
Is actually a cup of metal,
okay,
which is what I'd wear if I played baseball.
Yeah.
A cup made of metal that makes a lot of
really
sense.
I can't imagine that. They did used to have metal cups. That was what kind of the first cups were.
Is there anything that the Stars, Jim Nill says we're good. I like the depth we have. Getting Steven Johns back is important. I didn't want to trade away too much of the depth we had in our minor league system. So because the last couple of years, he even said, last couple of years, we've been giving up picks in order to try and chase something, and I felt like we needed to stop doing that this year.
I mean, if you look at their, like, obviously, you know, obviously Shippy jump in here, but you look at the way they have been playing, I think you can make a solid enough argument that, like, this team is clearly headed in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, it's always a nice shot in the arm for the locker room if they do add somebody, but they added a lot this offseason. And, like, you just brought up, Steven Johns coming back is a huge addition that, you know, just... that you just kind of naturally had because he was finally able to return from his headaches and all the things that he's been dealing with. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not too concerned, but you look around at the rest of the NHL and a lot of teams added a lot of scoring and things like that. But this team's built on, you know, their defensive backbone and the goalie play of Ben Bishop and Anton Khudobin.
Okay. All right. Kevin, the other thing that's going on too, the NFL Combine is underway, y'all want to get into some mock draft talks, but Joe Judge says he won't establish a hierarchy of players because he says he can't give players a clean slate if he spends months talking about certain guys. Is that a smart decision on his part?
If
I get him, I can't be like, hey, I was talking crap about you beforehand. And
oh, no. I don't agree with that at all. I would absolutely want some players, and they're motivated by the fact that you talk trash about them. They're like, oh, the hell with that. I remember you, coach. I'm going to show you that I'm better than you thought I was all along. I think you instantly motivated like 20% of your team by bringing in a bunch of guys. That's what I would do. I would coordinate running down the players I wanted the most. And then, like, if you really investigated it after the fact, you'd be like, hold on. Did he go and draft all the people that he talked S about? And like, you got all that group and they'll all talk together about how much they want to show you that they don't suck.
Yeah. Mike, is that how you felt whenever your manager told you that you stunk? Would you were like, I'm going to show him.
Yes. Except my managers always did the cop out thing that Broadus says that they shouldn't do. They always said, hey, we're just going to go in another direction.
Oh man. I hate
type
that
of deal. They wouldn't just be honest and just say, I mean, you know, you're getting sent down. I know Jesse Hawley tells the story of Jason Garrett, right? His cop out was when he cut Jesse Hawley was, man, if I could have 53 Jesse Hawleys, and Jesse Hawley is sitting in there going, well, you do have one and you're releasing me. So this doesn't make any sense in what you're saying right now. So they try to downplay it and say good luck and not just say, the reason we're releasing you or the reason we're sending you down is, I know the general thing is you're not good enough, but then be specific. What did you not like about it?
So because that I can go work on it.
I can go work on it. Yeah. Some things I can't work on. Some of the things on, you just don't throw hard enough. I can't really throw harder.
See, that was one of the things that I always love when we talked to Steve Buschel and some of the staff with Bannister, and I know Woodward tries to do kind of the same thing, right, from what we asked him about that, is they always said, we try to be as honest as possible because we want them to come back. We want them to come back to the next level and be as good as they possibly can be. All right, Kevin, the other thing, the big fight. It was known as the big fight in the world of fighting.
Is this like you can't say Super Bowl or
something? You might now have Wilder and Fury part Trey.
It makes sense to me. I know they're going to have to find a way to sell it again. Well, it makes sense to me because this is the biggest fight for Wilder out there, and he's the one who has the contract option.
Okay.
If you're Tyson Fury, I'm sure you're like thinking about moving on to Anthony Joshua or whatever, but I think that Deontay Wilder's like, okay, this is obviously the biggest fight. And by the way, if I win this fight, I could even do Fury Wilder part 4 if it does big. Because think about it, because then it would be 1-1-1.
Does he still have an option on that too?
Not necessarily, but if you win it and it does big pay-per-view, then Anthony Joshua can just sit over pouting in Europe about how he shouldn't have lost his fight to begin with, and then he'd be in the mix. And so he said he doesn't want to, Wilder said he doesn't want to fight anybody else. He just wants to wait and then fight Fury again this summer. So we'll see what the number is, because I'm willing to bet, based on social media, that fight pops a pretty big number. I think their first one did, like, I don't know, 300,000 or 400,000 buys. I bet this one will be hovering closer to like 1 million or so. And so if that's the case, they will try to sell this, because 1 million-plus boxing pay-per-views do not come along very often outside of like Canelo and obviously Mayweather. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Don't forget, former world champion boxer Mikey Garcia will be on the show at 11:20 today. But coming up next, Corey has accepted the Cowboys are just waiting for the CBA, and that's why we're all driving ourselves insane. Talk about it next right here on The Fan.
All right, let's talk about DFW Security. You can get a sweet deal right now from DFW Security with their smart cameras. They make your home or business the smartest of all. They've helped out our family. We have DFW Security at our home with 4 cameras. We have, I don't know how many cameras my wife has at Oak Cliff Pediatrics, but they protect my wife's business too, and they do a great job of it with that smart app that they have. DFW Security has video analytics service powered by Alarm.com. It uses AI, that artificial intelligence, to make sense of what your cameras see in real time. It can tell whether an object is a person, animal, or a vehicle. For example, you're going to get alerted when a vehicle stops outside, but not every time one drives past or a vehicle leaves your property unexpectedly overnight. You can set your lights to turn on when a person enters your backyard, but not when it's an animal. It's that simple with DFW Security's Smart Camera Special, powered by Alarm.com. Here's pretty much what we have at our home. It's a smart hub with security, plus 4 smart cameras, including the doorbell camera, with video analytics, and it's less than $2 a day. Less than $2 a day. Call right now at 888-507-2344, and you mention my name, Mike. You're going to get free professional installation and free equipment. Both of those are going to be free. All you pay is the first month of service to get started. Plus, if you get installed in this month of February, by February 28th, you get 2 months free. Free professional installation, free equipment, 2 months free. DFW Security, 888-507-2344. That's 888-507-2344.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Back here on the KNC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan, I am convinced at this point, and we have 2 clips of audio here from Stephen Jones, Kevin, that might lend a little credence to the reason I think this.
Okay.
I'm convinced at this point that the Jones family has just gotten to all right, we're just going to wait and see what this CBA does. I also don't know if it's just the Jones family as much as it is the agency that is working with, that CAA and DAC are working together, and that they have just decided, hey, look, man, there's potential for big-time money to be out there, even bigger
this
money.
This is pretty wild.
So why don't we try and take advantage of this? And the Cowboys are like, look, if we can get Dak for a certain number and add all those players because a CBA gets done, then why don't we just wait this thing out? And Mike, Stephen Jones was on yesterday, was at the Combine yesterday, and he was talking. Let's go to cut 14 here, Shippy. He was asked, how would you characterize the last meeting with Dak?
It just kind of stopped. And we kind of left it where it was. And, you know, I wouldn't say there was anything acrimonious. We just, I guess they felt they were done where they were, and we felt like we were kind of where we were, and we never really got going again.
All right. Okay. Just really quick.
Who stopped it? Was that the follow-up is who stopped it?
I mean, kind of, but also I want to know more about what he thinks is and is not acrimonious, because he goes, it just kind of stopped. They were done where they were, and we were done where we were. If you're in the middle of a conversation, like, that feels like a little bit of acrimony when you're just like, nope, I'm done. Okay, me too. All right. And, like, that just, that feels, I don't know.
He was also discussing a little bit some of the cap challenges that exist.
We're going to have some challenges with our cap. Okay. I mean, we are, and certainly, you know, with Dak and Amari, that's going to shrink it in a hurry. And, you know, we're going to have challenges. But, you know, they're not challenges that we can't overcome. So, you know, it's going to be something that we've really got to, you know, keep our fingers on. Certainly if there's a CBA, if there's not a CBA, things get a lot tighter in terms of the rules. So, you know, we'll have to deal with that.
So, Mike, and I think that kind of lends itself to one of the discussion points you want to have here. He said, if the CBA is done, if it's not done, if it's not, obviously things get tighter.
I don't think the CBA is going to get done. I get all the positive talk. All that's coming from is from the owners. Zero positive talk is coming from the players.
Yeah.
I would hope that people that really love the NFL would read into what the owners are doing. And this will happen in all sports when we get to a collective bargaining agreement is coming up. The owners want the fans on their side. And maybe the players' union need to do a better job of striking first. But for the most part, most of us believe owners are the ones that make the sport work. It's okay that they're making hundreds of millions, if not like Jerry, maybe even up to $1 billion a year. I think I'm going exaggerating if he's making a billion a year. But I mean,
but they actually do bring in $1 billion in revenue per right. year. We said that last week.
So what they're doing is they're putting the fans, that's us, in a position when the players in the next week or two come out and say, we don't like this contract at all. We don't think it makes any sense. And us as fans, the majority are going to say, how do you not like it? You're getting more percentage of the pie. You guys are already making millions of dollars. I can't believe how selfish you are in this. And there's no deadline for the players to make a deal right now that the first offer is always the worst offer and probably not even close to the best offer that you're going to get. I get that the NFL players fold every time up to the deadline. Yeah. They fold and take whatever the owner said they will give. But yet, if you take the first offer from the owners, the worst offer, I can't imagine them doing this. So I don't think we're anywhere close to a deal getting done. I don't think it's going to happen by March 12th. I don't think it's going to be close to happening at draft time. I don't think it will happen before the 2020 season kicks off. So if the Cowboys are saying, we are not doing a deal with Dak Prescott till we know the new collective bargaining agreement, then to me, that means Dak is going to have to play on the franchise tag.
Just a quick note along those lines, we will probably learn more today, 4 o'clock. The sides are supposed to meet again. And so it's interesting that
4 o'clock. Central?
Yes, 4 o'clock Central.
Oh, crap. Never mind.
So it's interesting.
So during G-Bag.
Yes, that is correct. So it's interesting that while these votes are happening, and they're like, yeah, no, we're figuring it out, they're going to meet again because they're also like, hey, most of our people kind of think your deal sort of sucks and it's probably not going to make it.
And, so. And it's the guys that don't like the deal right now are the players that have the money that can sit back on
sure.
it. The guys that are like, oh, I'm kind of really interested in go ahead and get it done are the majority players that make the league minimum, but they still don't like it either. All right, so I do question, though, Kevin, because you heard him say that there, if he's suggesting, and Mike suggests, he doesn't think it's going to be done, and Steven just said, if that happens, then it's going to get tighter. What kind of decisions can they make? What kind of cuts can they make, and what can they do to get their quarterback back or hit the ground running next season, or are they going to be in a lot of trouble?
I think they're going to be in a lot of trouble, and I'm sorry, Corey, this does not like specifically directly answer your question, but kind of. I think they're going to be in a lot of trouble because that was the other thing that you heard him say, is we haven't talked since then. The concerning part for me is like, okay, if you didn't want to talk during the season, sure, that's fine.
Right.
The season's been over for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's been almost 2 months since the season ended for the Cowboys and nothing.
Yeah, but with Dak specifically?
Yes.
Okay.
And that's concerning to me when they're like, well, it's going to get tighter. Okay, then shouldn't you have been exploring all? Like, this is why I would like if they talked. You could put two offer sheets in front of Dak and be like, look, if the CBA gets done, this is the route that we're able to go. If it doesn't get done, this is the route that we're able to go. Let me know if you foresee either one of these proposals being acceptable to you or blah, 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 blah. Like, there's any number of things that you should have walked through at this point. So you're not just like, hey, this didn't pass. Do you want to chat?
Yeah. So you're frustrated with the fact that they haven't even gotten to a possible conversation point of what they would each feel comfortable with.
I would say this. The Cowboys, I just think this is, I've said it before, I'll say it again. This is a horrible way to treat your quarterback. People don't treat their quarterbacks this way.
You think they're like, either way.
Yeah, either way, they've already done wrong. They've already made Dak question if they really think that they like him in Dallas. At this point, to try to get this thing done, I'm just looking at contracts. Matt Ryan has signed for the most dollars ever in the history of the NFL at $150 million over 5 years. That was 2018 when he signed that contract. Russell Wilson makes the most money per year on average at $35 million. So it's 30 for Ryan, 35 for Russell Wilson. I would say this, if you think Dak is the guy, just offer him this, and I know this is a lot. It's 5 years, $180 million, so I've made you by far the highest paid player in the history of the NFL at your contract time.
That's $36
million per year. And the most guaranteed money in the history of the NFL is also Matt Ryan's contract at $94.5 million. I'm going to guarantee you $110 million. I've given you the most guaranteed money in the history of football. I've given you the most money overall in the history of football on a five-year contract, which you should be really good in those 5 years. We shouldn't see a deterioration of talent from Dak Prescott because of the age that he is at. If you say no to that, I don't care what the new... If CAA says, look, the new collective bargaining agreement might mean that that's still not enough, I'd say if I'm offering you $30 million more than the biggest contract in the history of the NFL, and I am offering you another $15 million more in guaranteed money than any player's ever got in the history of the NFL, you have become the richest paid player in the history of the NFL by far.
And it's still not good enough.
And if you're saying, well, Pat Mahomes and Watson will get more eventually, I'd say, look, if you can't accept that, you're traded. We are trading you. We are moving on, and you will not be the quarterback. If we can't trade you, then we're going to just franchise tag you, play you under 1 year while we're trying to trade you the whole season. But if you can't accept 5 for $180 and $110, then we have to trade you and we have to move on.
All right, Mike, does this make you feel any better? And I sent this to Kevin yesterday from Warren Sharp. You remember this?
Yes.
This is Dallas compared to Seattle. What the two teams did in their way cheap cap quarterback, okay, Mike?
To answer your question, it makes me feel much worse, Corey.
Mike, I want you to listen very closely. Here's what Seattle did with a way cheap quarterback. Here's what the Cowboys have done with a way cheap quarterback. Seattle, 4 playoff trips. Dallas, 2.
Right.
Seattle, 7 playoff wins. Dallas, 1. Seattle, 2 Super Bowl trips. Dallas, obviously, did not go those two times that we wanted them to go. And then they also had a Super Bowl win. Seattle fell back to 2 playoff wins in 4 years since Russ hit his cap of $10 million plus. So the question is, what happens to Dallas when Dak does, if they couldn't even take advantage of that window whenever they had it?
Most likely the Cowboys are going to be what they were under Tony Romo for the 3 years where they were struggling with the salary cap and him making a lot of money. Is they're going to be around an 8-8 team.
Seattle had a legendary defense at that time. They were an all-time defense.
It's one of these things. Yes. We're about to hit the same cycle we hit. The Cowboys didn't win in Dak's window to really win, and now they're up against the cap. Steven just said it. We're up against the cap. And because of that, we're going to have to be bad and really bad at certain areas. It's almost impossible not to be. Even Seattle, through this time right now where they're having somewhat success but really not a Super Bowl contender anymore, they've had horrible offensive line play. They've had at times horrible wide receiver play. And they've had to deal with it. Russell Wilson has been able to get a team that with just an average quarterback would probably be a 4-12 or 5-11 team, but he's able to get them to 10 or 11 wins. We're about to probably hit an 8-8 stretch here for 3 or 4 years, but that's not Dak's fault. That's the Cowboys' fault for not hitting the window properly. And then we know that through the history of the Jones family, at least this is my opinion, they're horrible at figuring out how to overcome adversity.
Then Kevin is the only option, the best, smartest option to say we've hit the as far as we can go with Dak. Yes. As much as we think he has a great future in the NFL, and we got to go with the cheap quarterback window again.
Yes.
That's the best option.
Look, and I have changed my opinion on this, and I also don't understand why this has gotten some people to dub me as a disliker of Dak. Like, since the very beginning, there's plenty of things I dislike, fair. But since the very beginning, Corey, you and I have defended Dak very, very much.
But we root for the laundry.
Well, I'm never going to use that phrase. But I do not think, and I've said this time and again, I do not believe that the Cowboys can win when everything is on an even playing field. They can't. They have shown that over the last 25 years since the salary cap, they can't.
Right.
And so that's why I say you have to go back to the cheap quarterback. Not because I don't like Dak, But I don't think we can win with him because he ain't like, I might make an exception for Pat Mahomes or, you know, like prime Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers. But yeah, like, he's not there yet. Right. And if you think he will get there, maybe. But what if he doesn't? So yeah, that's why I'm willing to make that trade.
Right, and I think Mike's in on that. I think a lot of people have kind of, that's why we keep throwing out the two options. We keep coming up with these different options. Well, what do you think Stephen Jones thinks about that?
Absolutely not. I mean, Dak's our quarterback, and you know, he's our quarterback for the future, and we have nothing but the greatest respect for him. He's a competitor. You know, he's won a lot of football games for us. Obviously, he, like us, we all want to take that next step, you know, and get into a championship game and, you know, get to the big game and ultimately win a championship.
So there you go, Kevin. We tried. We tried talking some sense into him.
And maybe that question gets asked. I just wish that you could hear like the whole string and is somebody standing right there to follow up and say, but what about the fact that you don't win the games that matter with him? That's the question I want to know. And he can, and then I just want to hear like, well, that's because of this, that's because of that. And then the next question, of course, is how is that going to change when you have to pay him so much more money? Like, those are the two questions I would really love to hear in succession when he says something like that. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, this time, we really will talk to former Texas Ranger Todd Zeal. Next, right here on The Fan.
We're back here on the KNC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan. And on the line with us right now is former Texas Rangers third baseman and current Sportsnet New York commentator Todd Zeal. Todd, how's it going today, man?
Good, guys. How are you?
Well, it's baseball season, so we're getting pretty ramped up right now. My co-host doesn't believe that baseball season starts until opening day, but I think spring training is very important. Your thoughts?
I can see both sides of that because as a player, I never really liked going to spring training. It was like, okay, time of the year that you're excited to get it back going, but then you're there for 5 days and your body's sore and you're like, all right, can we get to the real stuff already? So I get it. Baseball season starts when the lights go on and it's opening day. But for a lot of fans, I think this kicks off what seems to be, okay, winter's over, summer's coming, and let's get ready.
So Zach Greinke said he just learned recently that some of these reporting dates weren't mandatory, and that almost made my brain explode. I didn't know that either. Is this not known by all baseball players?
No, it's not. And it's so funny that Zach decided to take advantage of that this year at this point in his career. I guess there's probably something in the CBA that says that you can't hold guys mandatorily for more than X amount of days. So when they say pitchers and catchers report, I guess it is voluntary. I learned something new from Zach this year. And, you know, it's just, He's a funny guy. He's a quirky, funny guy, and he decided, oh well, you know what? I'm going to be ready when it's opening day, so I'll take an extra 3 weeks at home with the family.
Todd Zeal joining us right now on 105.3 The Fan. Todd, I have this question. It's based off the Astros and this season. You've had thousands of major league at bats. There had to be a few times going up where you thought or knew you were going to get hit. How tough is it to step into a batter's box with possibly that in the back of your mind that I'm possibly going to get hit right now?
That's a really good question because and that's something that nobody's asked me at this point. But there were times when I walked into the box and I didn't know, but I had a feeling that somebody was going to be coming after me, whether it was just because of the heat of the game or something that had happened on the field. And it is a little bit intimidating. I mean, those guys out there, you know, have the weapon in their hands, and there's some hard throwers, and nobody likes to get hit by the baseball, but it's one of those things that it's inevitable. Everybody's going to get hit at some point if you have enough at bats, and it's something you kind of try to remove from your mind and make that the anomaly. But look, it's a good point going into this season because I think those guys down there in Houston are going to be on their toes a little bit because I think there's some guys that are going to want to have, you know, sort of street justice, if you will, field justice, instead of, you know, what came down from the commissioner's office, which was nothing really for the players. So I think there's going to be some policing done on the field this season.
Were you surprised by the reaction of all the players coming to spring training? Because just as a former player, Todd, I was a little bit surprised. I didn't know that the other players were going to be this mad at what happened.
I'm totally with you on that. I think, and especially because it was a bit of a delayed reaction because nobody was in spring training yet. So when the news came down and there was a lot of media talking about it, the players weren't getting quoted at that point because they didn't have mics in front of them and cameras, you know, in spring training. And so I have been a little bit surprised at how feverish some of the responses are, especially because, you know, like Ortiz and Pedro kind of alluded to this, hey, it's kind of one for all for one, and what happens in the clubhouse stays in the clubhouse, all that stuff. You've seen a different kind of tone take place this season, even more so than when there were guys that were, you know, using PEDs and some guys that weren't. You never had the kind of outward expression that you're seeing so far this season.
We got Todd Zeal joining us here on the KNC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan. I guess the big thing, and it's kind of becoming a bigger debate amongst our show because my co-host loves wrestling, so he loves conflict. Do you think this is good for baseball or bad? Because now there's a level of interest in somebody to hate.
I don't think it's good for baseball because I think that the Astros were sort of becoming that villainous team anyway because they were good and they were very confident on the field and they'd been successful over the last few years and they seem to keep adding on you know, to their list of talented players. So they are becoming a little bit villainous, and I think there may be some to the wrestling analogy, some point to the fact that had this come out about a team that wasn't in the World Series a couple of times in the last couple of years and didn't have a championship, but was doing it to try to get an advantage, I don't think it would have the same kind of reaction. This is a team that was, you know, seen as winners and a little bit cocky. So this coming down on them has made them even a bigger villain. But overall, I think it's a black eye on baseball and something that I'm sure the commissioner and people within the game are going to hope to see start to dissipate as the season goes on and baseball gets back to a good product on the field.
Talk with Todd Zeal right here on 105.3 The Fan. And I know in just one second, I do want to get to the Ultimate Rivals video game, but I also hope you appreciate how long I waited to ask this question. I want to go back to the summer of 2013 in hopes that you can talk to us about your trip to Scotland with Charlie Sheen to go find the Loch Ness Monster.
Wow, that was an interesting one. And that was, you know what, look, I had an interesting foray into film and television production when I left the game. One of those things that was on the good side of that is I produced a TV show called Anger Management starring Charlie. We became friends, and part of my responsibility, honestly, as a producer and executive producer of that show was to make sure that Charlie was, you know, focused and ready to go on set. It was a lot of grinding hours, and we had time off. We took things that were as far away from Hollywood as possible, and that was something that he had always said that he wanted to do, was get on a rowboat in Loch Ness and search for Nessie. So we jumped on a plane, went over there, and spent some time and had some amazing stories. And, you know, it was a once-in-a-lifetime experience. I laugh when I think about it because it almost seems surreal even to me now.
Todd Zeal joining the KNC Masterpiece with great Charlie Sheen stories right there for you. Nice work, Kevin, digging that one up. You started your career with the St. Louis Cardinals, and you played with the Rangers for a bit. Now, I don't know if you know what happened in Game 6.
Oh, my God,
Kevin,
Corey, shut
the
up.
Nelson Cruz moment. But has your heart always resided in with the Texas Rangers since then?
I am not just because I'm on the show, but I actually really loved my time in Texas as a part of the Texas Rangers. It was one of those unusual rocky seasons for me. I thought I was going to be a Dodger for a long time. Piazza and I get traded. And I was kind of the guy that was the back end of that deal with Mike for a bunch of those Marlins. And so when I got out of Florida, I knew I was being, you know, brought there to be traded again. And when I went to Texas, I was excited to have a place to play. I liked that team. I knew that team had a lot of talented guys. And so my time there, I really enjoyed. And quite honestly, I was expecting to sign there long-term and stay a part of the Rangers. And Doug Melvin and, you know, the organization at the time was, you know, trying to figure out other ways to go. The Mets came to the table last minute very aggressively. I thought they had a better chance to win at that time because of what was going on in Texas. And I end up in New York, and, you know, the rest is history. But I really loved my time in Texas. I loved being, you know, in that South Lake Grapevine area. I think it's a great place to live and raise a family. And I always do have a fond recollection of my time there.
Kind of wish they'd have put a roof on that stadium before you were, while you were here, though.
You know what? I never minded heat. That's one of those things that, you know, maybe I like now if I walk outside and it's humid and hot and I'm dressed for business, it bugs me and I'm annoyed and I don't like it too hot on the set when I'm trying to do TV. But as a baseball player, when it was summertime, I knew it was going to be hot and I welcomed the heat. So that never really bothered me in Texas. And they did a good job of trying to limit our time on the field pregame so that we had some energy. But it's easy to get loose and the ball flies. So those are two things that I remember about playing in hot days in Texas.
Todd, I'd love to know today's game. You cover the Mets, and Pete Alonso had an unbelievable rookie season, arguably one of the best or the best all time. And in your time, you had seasons where you had 20-plus home runs, 31 in 1997. If you were back in, let's, you know, 1987, 88, right before you made the major leagues, but now it's 2019, 2020, how different would your swing be from where you were developing your swing before you hit the major leagues, the way that now it's about home runs and kind of your power numbers rather than your batting average numbers?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know that my swing would have been any different unless, and I think this is the part of that question that gets lost a little bit and is nuanced, is that because that started developing in these kids' early formative baseball years, you know, with analytics and, you know, swing plane and launch angles and all those things, I think these kids developed that swing so it was a natural swing for them. I did what was natural for me. I emulated Steve Garvey. I stood straight up and down, had my hands low, and tried to use the whole field. But, you know, what you've seen over the history of this game is a lot of different swings where guys start differently and finish differently, but at the point of impact, it's kind of similar. And now you're just seeing a trend of the same thing, but with that emphasis on getting the ball in the air. There's, you know, enough evidence now that says if you hit the ball in the air, you got a better chance to score runs over the long term. I still miss some of the small ball and some of the nuanced piece of the strategy of the game that gets lost in this, but I think it's just a product of these kids learning this from the time they're learning to swing in Little League.
Can Pete Alonso be better than 260, 53 home runs in his second season?
If he is, it's a phenomenal feat because this kid's coming off a miraculous first season. He's got great, great potential. He's got a great approach. He's got a humble, solid head on his shoulders. And I think the thing that may be most impressive about him is that he wants to work and learn and get better. He wants to continually get better. He doesn't think that that is a ceiling for him. He thinks that's a great start, but he's looking to do more. So hard to say. I mean, you always have in the back of your mind what was talked about a lot of the time during last year's season was the ball different. Was it flying out? Because it was flying out in an inordinate pace. He still bettered everybody else in the league and in baseball, but the ball was flying out of the ballpark. If that gets reset at some point, maybe 40 home runs is going to be, you know, a great season. We'll have to see how it compares, but this kid's got a great, great future ahead of him, and he's a great kid to watch.
Now, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, especially Ultimate Rivals, jumps to mind because my stupid co-host brought up the St. Louis Cardinals. What can you tell us about the Ultimate Rivals video game and what you got going on there?
Well, I was fortunate to get contacted by the CEO, Ben Friedland, almost 5 years ago, and he had this idea of an arcade action sports licensed game. We, you know, amassed licenses from all the leagues and players, and we have Ultimate Rivals The Rink, which is the first in the platform that is a arcade action high-speed game. But the amazing and unique part of it is that you can cross the athletes from one sport into another. So you can play Wayne Gretzky and LeBron James against Alex Ovechkin and Alex Morgan. And it, you know, harkens back to the days of like NBA Jam, but it's sort of a modern mix of Rocket League meets NBA Jam with a little Street Fighter thrown in. So we're excited about it. It's out on Apple Arcade right now. And it's just the first in the franchise. We've got Ultimate Rivals, The Court, the basketball version coming out later this summer. And, you know, it's something that's new and unique and different and something I'm excited about.
Awesome. Thank you so much for giving us the update on that and obviously for talking Loch Ness Monster and baseball with us, too.
Oh, those are always, you know, you can always get a variety with me, right? Loch Ness Monster to Ultimate Rivals. You can't go wrong. But I appreciate you guys giving me the time today, and ultimaterivals.com if you want to learn more about it. And I'm sure this baseball season is going to unfold some interesting things.
We'll bring you on back for sure. Thank you so much, Todd.
Look forward to it. Thanks, guys.
Former Texas Ranger Todd Zeal.
He was a blast.
Do you know that about the Loch Ness Monster thing?
I remember it, but I know it wouldn't have been in my
role. You know who knew about that, right?
You did.
No, Kavanaugh.
Oh, yeah.
Of course Kavanaugh knew about it. Come on. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, Bassick is concerned that Luka's ankle is going to take down any potential playoff run before it even starts. Who next right here on The Fan?
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.